And he's a big guy, right? So he's looking down on me like this. And he's like going, coach, coach, I'd take a penalty. And I go, no, you can't, because Taylor, he was terrible.
Welcome back to another episode of Offside with me, Taylor Twellman. I'm coming to you today with stars in my eyes, not because I'm fresh off a red eye. Well, that's part of the reason, but also because I'm still digesting the highest scoring match day of 2024.
Gomez brings it down. It's Andres Gomez, and it's in.
It's in. Messi's delivery was world class.
Goals, goals, and more goals. Seven in the Cali Classico.
And just 1 minute later, Kikanovic in an onside position, 4-2.
Abobasi slots it home. It's a one-goal deficit.
Six in St. Louis versus Kansas City.
Tommy is in! Tommy! Tomlin to tie the game!
And then two each from Messi.
I mean, what do we need to say? The fans are telling us all we need to know. Get used to hearing that chant this season.
Bawanga.
95th minute, Denny Bawanga! And a draw that would feel like a win!
And Arango.
Just like that, Chicho Arango stands alone at the top of the Golden Boot race in Major League Soccer.
You really couldn't pick a bad game this weekend, and next weekend, I'm hoping for the same. 14 games on Saturday. Let's start with LA Galaxy visiting Austin, then the league's highest scoring team, Inter Miami, are off to the New England Revolution in front of an anticipated crowd of 60,000 plus at Gillette Stadium. Philadelphia hosting top scorer Chicho Arango and Real Salt Lake, and finally a Timbers versus LAFC rematch, which just 2 weeks ago gave us four goals and a red card. The stars are out, the goals are flying, and every match every weekend is in only one place. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Changing the script a little bit, because first up today, we're going to have the Offside Call of the Week, a message from listener Austin in Virginia.
My question for you is, how long do you think it will take for American-born players to choose MLS as their preferred league over the European clubs and the European leagues? And what can MLS do to expedite the process?
Austin, I've got three words for you. League of choice. You've heard Don Garber say it numerous amount of times. You've heard so many of the MLS owners talk about league of choice. Now, what's interesting is that the South American player now is choosing to come to Major League Soccer instead of Liga MX in order to get to where they want to go. Miguel Amarone, great example. Thiago Amada, soon to be the second. But what you're asking me is actually about the American player. This league was founded on the American player, giving the American player a greater opportunity to enhance their game, but also to improve the national team. But I don't think you should ever feel negative or down when an American player uses Major League Soccer to get to Europe. And why do I say it that way? FC Dallas's Academy, New York Red Bull's Academy, every single time they are talked about at Juventus, at Bournemouth, or wherever they may be, you have to talk about Major League Soccer. And in order to be a league of choice, you've got to be a league in the world market. They're doing that right now. At this point in the season, 9 weeks in, I want to talk about another thing that is special about Major League Soccer. It's a league of parity, where rules like the salary cap are designed to keep teams close and every game, every week, exciting, but also unpredictable. Take this weekend, for example. The Galaxy needed four goals to beat dead last San Jose, who were shut out last weekend at home by the Colorado Rapids, but then went away to LA and somehow scored three past the Galaxy defense.
For the San Jose Earthquakes, still looking for major points in the West, but there's something there to build upon.
It may sound obvious, but when a team at the bottom can give a team at the top a run for their money on any week, the league is not easy to dominate year after year, week after week, game after game. It also means that comeback stories from epic lows to epic highs are a feature of this league. It's not a glitch. It's about timing and momentum. And if you can put those two things together, you can actually do something. That's been the case since the very beginning of MLS. 1996, DC United, solid 500 team. But then they get hot at the end of the season. They win 7 of the last 10, and they have a dominant playoff run that ends with their first MLS Cup trophy.
Take a look at how it ended.
An incredible comeback by DC United, capped off by Eddie Pope's head into the upper corner.
Or look at 2009 Real Salt Lake. They had a losing regular season, but they pulled it together and went undefeated in the playoffs to win MLS Cup.
Russell. And Russell has been a champion out of Real Salt Lake. The underdog has won.
So today, I want to look back on two of the best single-season turnarounds in league history, the 2016 Seattle Sounders and the 2023 Sporting Kansas City. Nearly 1 year ago, Sporting Kansas City was in a bad, bad place. 10 games into the season, no wins. Peter Vermes, manager since 2009, was under intense scrutiny for the first time ever. The players looked drained of confidence. Their own fans booed them off the field twice.
And there's the final whistle and celebrations down on the Colorado bench.
Part of this horrific start was bad luck. Kansas City started the season with a bunch of injuries. All of their designated players, starting goalkeeper Tim Melia and other key players all over the field. But then players returned. Tough conversations were had. And following Peter Vermes' mantra of one game at a time, they started grinding out results.
The final action at Lumen Field. The long wait for the first win is over for Sporting KC. The bench hugs and almost a sigh of relief from Peter Vermes. Your thoughts on the performance?
From May 1st to the end of the season, Kansas City were the best team in the league. And in that period, they led the league in points, goals per game, and had the fewest losses in the Western Conference. And they became the first team in league history to make the MLS Cup playoffs after not recording a win in their opening 10 games.
The captain, Johnny Russell, might have just sent Sporting Kansas City into the postseason.
So today, nearly a year after they began their stunning turnaround, I'm going to talk to team captain Johnny Russell about how they pulled it off, how to keep the faith when everything is going wrong, and what their comeback says about Major League Soccer. Johnny, we're here talking on April 22nd, 2024. Exactly 1 year ago today, you were walking off the field as the only goal scorer in a 2-1 loss to the New England Revolution.
There goes the final whistle. New England Revolution victorious again.
Does it feel like it was a year ago, or do you remember it like it was yesterday?
I'm trying to forget. We still remember that. That was a tough time. That was a tough game as well.
What's interesting, Johnny, is because when Peter talks about that, he said it was that game that he knew you guys had the potential to make a comeback, that you guys had something. Would you agree with that, or what happened in that game that would make Peter think that?
I think just probably the way we responded in the second half, and then especially going down to 10 men, Fonte gets sent off. But the first half, we were so bad. We couldn't connect a pass, and we were just getting ran all over by New England. We just looked like we had nothing left, nothing about us. And then at halftime, you know, there was some questions asked. Sort of some questions that professionally like hurt your pride. Really, are you basically, have you gave up? Is this what we're going to be? And I think the reaction from the guys showed that, you know, this isn't what we're about. This isn't the way we want to go down. And definitely the way we responded, I know we didn't win the game, but I think the way we performed, getting the goal back.
Johnny Russell with the goal, a goal coated in possibility for Sporting Kansas City.
And then we had chances as well. We could have tied the game up. I think just the way we reacted in that second half after being asked those questions, I think showed everyone there that, you know, we are not willing to, you know, go without a fight.
Let's go back to the beginning of the season. You're injured on opening day. So is Melia, Pulido, Kinda, Rosero. So many players unavailable. The season then starts off rocky, right? You get 2 draws, 2 losses, 1 goal scored in the first 4 weeks, which leads to the 10 winless games Let's one start on a personal level. What was your emotion like and the feeling like unable to help this team kind of get out of that spell?
That was the last preseason game we had. It was probably a ball that I didn't really have to go for, but it's not really my makeup. And
no, it's not. No.
And I just completely overstretched and I done it at, you know, quite a lot of force. And my hamstring just, I just felt it immediately just go. And I knew right there how it was bad as well. For about a week, I couldn't walk on it. I think I missed the first four games as well. That was tough. I don't like being in a helpless position where I feel like I can't affect things, which you're just sitting on the sidelines, you're watching from up top.
It's brutal. It's torture.
It's the worst. It really is the worst part. Like Friday, watching all the guys get ready for the game, and then the game day, it's just, it sucks.
I don't think people fully understand driving to the stadium when you know you're not playing because you're injured.
Yeah.
It's literally purgatory.
Yeah, it's a lonely drive.
You're literally like, I don't want to be here, but I have to be here. But you're like, no, I don't really want to be there.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because when I look at those 10 winless games, naturally you and I are talking about the injuries. But secondly, there's got to be frustration. Yet the team had three red cards in those 10 games. And then just four goals were scored in that. And so I look at that team, Johnny, and I see a bunch of veteran leadership experience, guys that know how to take care of their bodies, how to go about their business. And yet it all seems like to be unraveling inside that locker room. Was it anger? Was it frustration? Was it sadness? What was it?
I mean, it was probably all of that at different periods. The frustration was, I mean, even when I got back, we perform all week in training. We do the same things we've always done. We prepare properly for games. We're set up going into games, and then whatever reason it is, we get into the game and just nothing goes. Obviously, confidence has got a huge factor in that. But yeah, like the anger of not winning games, constantly losing games, at that time seen as basically one of the worst teams in league history is the way it was going. So, I mean, there's so many things that go into it, and I'll go back to the professional pride thing. That's probably one of the things that turned it. When we spoke, I said that I'm not going to be remembered as being a part of one of the worst teams in this league. It's just not going to happen.
The other thing, though, that changed it, is you were there, I wasn't, but I read in the local papers about this meeting at the Illig Ranch.
Yeah.
And I know and have been part of teams where you've just got to air your dirty laundry. You got to do it in a manner, in a safe space, I should say.
Yeah.
What happened that day that changed it?
We were probably up until 3-4 in the morning. They've got a big fire pit there, which is where the fire pit dance comes from.
Yep.
That was Gaddy Kinder that started that. I'll never forget, it was hilarious. But we must have sat there for 3-4 hours. We begin with me talking, a couple of the older guys talking. But it was actually Kendall McIntosh said, like, everyone should speak. And I agreed, no matter how big or how small you thought your role was in a team, whether if you're someone like me, captain of the team, first year pro, rookie. So everyone spoke, and some people who are a bit shy or had maybe had a couple of beers as well. But I mean, you know what it's like. Sometimes you just need that for people to come out their shell. And it was hugely beneficial. And some guys spoke about things going on in the field or going on in the facility or ways that we can be better as a team. Guys spoke about their personal lives or grown up. So there was just so many things that were spoken about, so many things you learned about your teammates that you didn't know. It definitely brought us together. You know, you just get that feeling after something where you're like, oh, there's definitely something here. And then obviously the stories that come from that, you joke about it for days after. And that led into the Seattle game, which is obviously where we pick up our first win. And
yeah,
such a hard place to go for a traveling team. It's a difficult place to go and pick up points. And we managed to go and get the win there.
You scored two goals in 30 minutes, the team does, at Seattle. There had to be a sense, a gut feeling of, oh my goodness, we unlocked this misery. It's gone. It's going to be gone. Now we're going to ride this wave as long as we can. Is that fair?
it was fair because I think we showed everything in that game as well. We showed how good we can be on the ball and cutting through teams to get the goals.
Scotty Kinder inside the area and an opening goal for Sporting KC. And the issues in front of goal are over for now. And what a perfect start for Peter Vermees' men. 1-0. Chance to go for goal. It's a double. And SKC belying the current form and position in the league.
But then you're going to come under pressure there as well, especially when you're leading games. Their crowd get them behind them and they're just attacking you.
Freddy Montero goes down and the referee's going to give a penalty. Maybe it's just handed the sound as a lifeline.
We just showed that we can fight it out as well. It wasn't pretty towards the end, but we'd done everything we could to get that result. So I think it showed so many different aspects of our game. And that one was huge. That was probably through what we'd done this season, even making the playoffs. I think that one for me, getting that first victory, just your shoulders being able to relax, getting that off your back. That was probably for me the most important one.
I mean, think about it, Johnny. From May 1st to the end of the regular season, you guys were the best team in the league. I think Decision Day is where you guys really put a stamp on you might not want to play us come playoff time. Because one, you needed the win. Two, you needed the three teams around you to drop points. You had two of the three goals that day. How good was that?
No, that was up there with my best moments here. To even go into that game with a shot from where we were, no one would have thought that, no one would have given us a chance. It made more difficult as well because they needed to win as well. And yeah, just tried to use the occasion and, like you said, managed to get those goals as well. First one, probably a little bit typical of what people would expect from me cutting in from that side.
Here you see Russell out wide again, running at Gregush, turning back on his left foot. Johnny Russell slots it home. There's only one. Johnny Russell, Sporting Kansas City, go in front.
And then the second one, just things showing what we had done throughout that game, just pressing, chasing guys down.
Kinder putting it back across again. This time Boxall tries to clear. Russell blocks it. Russell puts it away. That should just about do it.
Huge, getting both of those goals.
Let's listen to the reception that's given to Johnny Russell as he hands the captain's bat to Andre Fontas.
And then end of the game, they put the other game on the big screen as well, so you get to watch that and know that you've then got a home sort of playoff game as well, which was incredible.
Watching with great anticipation. There you see the celebration. The match has gone final in San Jose. Sporting Kansas City will be hosting a wild card playoff game at midweek here at Children's Mercy Park. From out of the playoffs to hosting a playoff match, Decision Day drama did not disappoint.
When you go into the playoffs, was there a sense within the team that the playoff results really didn't matter because of the remarkable comeback that you had and you were playing with house money?
Yeah, we were just like, yeah, now what have we got to lose?
Yep.
The stretch of games that we just played, the run that we were on, like you said, we were thinking, like, who's going to want to play us? You know what the playoffs are like? It's always that team that hits form, becomes hot right at the end where you're like, kind of want to avoid them as long as we can. And that's the way we felt. We were going in to play the top seed. Most people wouldn't have gave us a chance. So we just went in it full of confidence that, you know what, we've got ourselves here. Let's just go for it, see what happens. And, I mean, I think we showed that, especially away game. The way we played.
The away game at St. Louis City was, I'd argue, probably the best performance of the season. Yeah, even though you needed many of those to get in there.
Yeah.
But I was in the building, Johnny. I had seen, finally, everyone fulfill their role. Like, it just seemed like it was the culmination of, one, you guys playing at a high level, and more so, St. Louis City kind of falling flat at the end of the year.
Yeah, and we knew that we had to go and do that because of how good that they'd shown that they were throughout the year, especially at home. I mean, it's not luck because we're good guys with that quality, but some of the goals we score, you know, Logan's banger, Gaddy's is ridiculous.
Oh, what a goal!
incredible performance, and then obviously to bring them back home with a chance of seeing it out, which probably wasn't the prettiest game to watch, but playoff, you just have to win. No one remembers how well you played. It's the results, and that's it.
I used to always say there's no pictures on a box score, just numbers.
Exactly.
When you came into this league, you knew that it was a league of parity, in a league of momentum. You guys are a great example of that in 2023. Do you think in this league that's a positive or a negative? And quite honestly, you can answer both. But how do you view that? Because it's unlike any other league around the world.
People can have their opinions of the promotion, relegation, all that kind of stuff. And then it doesn't really matter what you do in the regular season. It really doesn't. As soon as that time hits for playoff, that's when it counts. And yes, there's leagues that played in the championship, obviously, where there's playoffs as well. But there's also the automatic promotion and relegation as well. So this league is just solely focused on postseason. That's it. End of the season. I don't know. I probably think it is a good thing. It's different from everyone else. It's good to be different. I mean, how many teams have we seen win the Supporters Shield, record points, and then you're gone, first round of the playoffs?
Yeah.
So, and that is probably what makes it so unique as well. Everyone knows that it's playoffs, and it's just whoever's the best team through that, whoever does whatever it takes to win, who's got what it takes to win as well. So there can only be one winner. You've got 29 teams trying to do it.
When you have grandkids, what's the one story you're going to tell them about the 2023 Sporting Kansas City season?
I'll probably tell them a little bit about the owner's ranch. Just a turnaround as well. Just that was part of a team who were seen as the one... probably the worst team in league history at that point, and we were able to turn it around and get into the playoffs. It was incredible to be a part of. Of course, we wish we prolonged it and actually got something from it.
All eyes on the referee now. The fans are on their feet in Houston. It's all over! The Houston Dynamo are headed to the Western Conference Final!
But I think we all learned a lot from it. And I said to them after the game, you know, we lost, our season's over, but I couldn't be more proud to be part of this team, proud to be their captain, and just proud to be a part of the team. It really was incredible. I'm not a guy who likes to lose, but for everything that we went through and shown that year, I had to tell them that that's such an immense amount of pride in that locker room.
'23 Sporting Kansas City may have had the most impressive single season turnaround in league history, but they missed out on one thing, the one thing that cements their legacy, an MLS Cup. This next team I want to talk about, they actually left it until later in the season to turn things around, but what did they do? They went and won MLS Cup, the 2016 Seattle Sounders. Now, the Sounders had been in the league since 2009 and had yet to win a cup. 2016 didn't look like the year it would happen. Their top striker departed for China, and they started 0-3.
And for the second time tonight, Pedro Morales gives the Whitecaps the lead.
The first half of the year was painful for Sounders fans. For each run of positive results they put together, they'd slip back even into a more damaging stretch of losses.
Once again,
by July, they had 20 points through 20 games, and they parted ways with Ziggy Schmidt, the only manager they had ever known in Major League Soccer. So who steps in? Assistant coach Brian Schmetzer, born and raised in Seattle, a Sounders player in the 1980s before MLS, a coach in the team's USL days in the early 2000s, and somehow Schmetzer pulls it out. He pulls the Sounders out of a nosedive to lift their first MLS Cup ever. Let's hear the full story from the man himself. Brian, welcome back to the show. I want you to go down memory lane. We're going to go back to 2016, the first half of that season. Start with what went wrong in that season from your point of view.
You know, interesting. I don't know if I did enough research to figure out what went wrong. Zig had been there and been real successful. The team had been successful, won a bunch of Open Cups, Supporter Shield. We never could get over the hump. We could never get, you know, into MLS Cup. You know, after a while, you know, it just was wearing on guys. And, you know, it was kind of an eclectic mix of players. I mean, you had Flint, obviously, and your good friend Herc and Nelson and Freeburg and Tyrone Mears and Roman Torres, Chad Marshall. I mean, it was a good group.
Yep.
I guess we just weren't in sync.
I go back to that game. It was at Sporting Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
It was a hot day. I remember the game being on ESPN, and it was as, from my point of view since covering this league, it was as of an anemic flat performance I've ever seen from a Ziggy Schmidt team, a Seattle Sounders team, whatever it may be.
There's a shot for the Sounders, and they get a round of applause, ironically, from this crowd.
In the 87th minute, and that shot missed the target by 5 yards.
Then Ziggy Schmidt is let go after that. You guys had 20 points in the 20 games. Did you ever believe that there was going to be a chance you could turn it around?
Yeah, I thought so. Look, the team was a good team. I mean, there were a lot of, you know, top players in that group. The cohesion just wasn't right. We couldn't fix that. So, yeah, that game was disappointing. Certainly, I felt that day that the team didn't give it its all for Zig, and that's unfortunate. Things like that are going to happen in our sport, but it was just, you know, kind of one of those moments in time where, you know, it wasn't our proudest moment as a franchise.
No team had ever made the playoffs with 20 points in the first 20 games. And then the big change comes in your time as a manager. Nicholas Ladero comes in.
Yeah.
We all know him as the great for the Seattle Sounders, but I remember the story initially when he showed up. He said no pregame music 90 minutes before the game. He wanted the team to focus. Just what impact did he have, obviously, on the field? But I think I'm more intrigued about what he did off the field, because right when he showed up, everything changed.
So I'll retell that story. It was a little more dramatic because it wasn't no music 90 minutes before the game. It was like this. So here I am, first time coach. We're talking about stuff. And, you know, locker rooms, they're lively. Guys want to get into their groove and they music. You know, one guy had the iPod at the time or whatever you want to call it. And there was music. And so I remember we go out for warm up. Got a normal, everything was still normal, still music. But when we come out of warm-up, back in to get changed, ready to go out, he just walks in very quietly. The music's going. Nolan Meyer had the jukebox at the time. Nico just walks in, shuts the music down and goes, okay, guys, we need to focus for the game now. And everybody just like went, oh, well, this is, oh, okay, this is different. You know, so it was quiet. And there was that awkward moment of, okay, who's this new guy come and turn our music off? But then everybody kind of jumped on board and said, oh yeah, okay, we're gonna focus. We're gonna start our game right now.
As a manager though, was there a part of you where it was kind of like, oh, I kind of like this guy?
No, I loved it. I mean, it was different.
Yes.
And that's what I guess this group of players needed to the tone of the interview. It was something different because we were used to doing things a certain way. And then they hear a different voice in myself. And then Nico comes in, he turns music off and everybody's focused and there's, you know, talk, but it's soccer talk. It's not, you know, you hear this song or what's Beyonce's latest hit or whoever was popular in 2016. Yeah. I don't know.
The first five games come and go. Then I show up, you're undefeated. And I look at you and say, how are you going to do this? And you were, Brian, I don't think you remember it to this day. You may, but I vividly remember you looking me right in the eye and say, we go 8-2-4, we're in. And as it keeps going, my editor, Mark Connolly, and I are looking at each other as we like numbers and we like, odds and everything else. And we look at it, we're like, holy crap, they're going to do it. They're going to literally go 8-2-4. One, why did you even say the record out loud? Because you had a point total in mind?
I just felt that we needed that many points based on the historical averages of making it into the playoffs. I mean, it was just kind of a random thing, but we did a little bit of math to say we need to win at least 8, you know, a couple of losses in there and 4 draws. I mean, that's pretty hard. I mean, that's a pretty good record in any stretch of any MLS season. So, you know, that was just a number, but we didn't use that in our coaching to the players.
Yeah.
That was kind of more internally just for the coaches.
I remember a couple games along that way. It was the impressive 3-1 home win over Portland.
Rolled on for Dempsey. They gave him the space and Dempsey exploits it.
I remember the equalizer, I think, to save a point in Houston, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was Ladero.
Oh, no. Nicholas Ladero has tied it up. It is a huge goal in the playoff hopes of Seattle. And as advertised, the Uruguayan has produced another vital goal for the Seattle Sounders.
But when it comes down to it, it's one game at home against Real Salt Lake. Take me back to that moment.
Well, look, we needed, and there was a lot of things going on, and we needed that game to get in. And, you know, that team just figured out ways how to win. It was tough. It was intense. It was tight. But, you know, they did it. They pushed it across the line.
A remarkable revival from the depths of despair to the wonderful possibilities of the postseason. Seattle have turned their year around in the space of less than 3 months.
I mean, you guys found ways to win. Where it took the first game in the knockouts, you beat Sporting Kansas City from a goal from Nelson Valdez. That was his first one of the year.
Fires it in front.
I think take our listeners into understanding momentum, because we all talk about it. We all use the word. There had to be a belief within the group at this point, anyone and everyone can do this. Nelson being the guy in that game.
So Nelson Valdez, I need to talk a little bit about him and his character. What a great, great human being. I mean, tremendous soccer player in his prime, you know, played in the Bundesliga. You know, came here as a designated player. People were killing him here in Seattle.
Yeah.
But the guy was such a good pro. What nobody saw were the intangibles that he brought on the training field and the intangibles that he brought in the locker room, because it was a little bit of an eclectic group. There were some different personalities, and he was one of the guys that kind of smoothed everything over. He had street cred. He could talk to Clint. He could talk to Herc. He could talk to some of the young American guys, because he was just good about helping Jordan. You know, just an all-around really good human being. And the catchphrase back then was, here's another sideline, was just, this happened out of the blue too. Maybe it was, I don't think it was the first game, but it was like the second game or third game after we won a couple. You know, I remember going to Orlando and scoring that, having a good result when Dempsey started to have the heart flutters. And we're just talking in one of our post-match speeches, and I'm saying, yeah, we can do this, we can do this. And Ozzy stands up, because I made him the captain. Ozzy stands up and goes, we're not blank, blank, blank finished. We're not finished yet. And after every game,
he had to do it.
Ozzy would stand up and say, we're not blankety blank finished. And Nelson believed it. Ozzy believed it. Roman believed it. Steph Fry, everybody started believing, yes, that we could win. And it was poetic justice for all of the crap that Nelson Valdez took that whole entire year, his contributions to push us past a really good Sporting KC team.
Absolutely,
it was. Maybe, yes. And look, maybe it was offsides, and maybe the goal that they scored wasn't offsides. I mean, it was that controversy, but he put us through. He put us through in that game, and it again continued that momentum in the playoffs, because it's different. You know, you have momentum in the regular season, but you needed to build some momentum in the playoffs as well.
I think it's interesting. Ozzy Alonso started the trend, started the superstition. You beat Dallas, you beat Colorado. Now all of a sudden the belief is running. You go to Toronto. Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. You guys didn't have a single shot on goal, correct?
Nope.
In the final?
Nope.
And yet you won MLS Cup.
you know, when the game was going and Steph makes that save, that was one of those moments where I going, okay.
Yep.
The gods are smiling on us. I mean, they're like, because Altidore just, I mean, it's unbelievable. The slow motion effects of just the ball coming across and Josie coming up like this and heading the ball back the other direction and Steph, his footwork and the save. I was like going, okay, yeah, we have a chance because they should have just scored. They should have been up.
Now the cross out to door. What a save by Fry. Wow.
It's the greatest save in Cup final history, hands down.
What a save, Stefan Fry.
Yeah, and then you go into overtime and we get a little bit of the game, but they're still on top of us. And then we get into the penalty kicks. And my team was pretty good in penalty kicks, you know, because we had three lefties. We had Ivanchitz, we had Nico, and Jova Jones. But then when Roman comes up to step up to take the sixth penalty, I mean, this is when I finally knew that we were going to win the game, because I tell a story. In the build-up to the game, we're practicing penalty kicks. We're doing it outside in freezing cold Toronto weather. We're doing penalty kicks. And Roman was like going, hey, coach, I take a penalty. And I go, no, Roman, you're not taking a penalty. No, coach. And he's a big guy, right? So he's looking down on me like this. And he's like going, coach, I take a penalty. And I go, no, you can't, because Taylor, he was terrible. In practice, he was terrible. He couldn't kick the ball straight. I mean, he wasn't a very clean ball striker.
Anyways, he wasn't.
He wasn't at all. And so we get to the sixth taker and, you know, Moro misses. He gets it off the crossbar. Roman kind of steps up like this to the thing. And I remember looking at Ante and Ezra and everybody. I was like, oh, we're going to win this. And it's not because, you know, we didn't know where Roman was going to kick the ball, but it was because Toronto's goalkeeper had no freaking idea of where that ball was going to go. And so, you know, he just steps up there and
Roman Torres. What a beast he's been tonight dealing with Josie Altidore and Sebastian Jovinko. And now an opportunity with his foot to win MLS Cup for Seattle, which he has done. The Seattle Sounders have done it. MLS Cup winners in 2016.
Wasn't a great penalty. Thank God the goalkeeper moved the other way. But I knew we were going to win when Roman stepped up there.
But that was the belief that started in Orlando when Ozzie kept saying, we're not going anyway. This thing's a... That's the belief I'm talking about, which leads me to the whole gist of why I wanted to get your story of 2016 Sounders, because I think your story epitomizes what Major League Soccer is all about. A league of parity, a league of redemption, a league of it's never over until it's over. And I find it ironic, Brian, that in your first season as a manager, that sets the standard by which every single season you take over and start anew, that's got to be in the back of your mind that this is never over till it's over.
I think there's been way too many examples, not just from the Seattle Sounders, but you mentioned Sporting KC last year. There's other guys, other teams that have come from way back to win championships and everything. It is hard to win championships in our league, but it's not impossible. It is not impossible. Team that gets hot in the playoffs, they're gonna go. They're gonna play well. They're gonna believe. You get that belief in your team. We had a really good roster, and they just needed to bring it all together, and they needed to believe that they could win.
Does 2024 Seattle Sounders believe that they can do this the way 2016 did?
Well, the coach does. I think so. I mean, we have it. Look. With all the struggles, and look, there's some things circulating. I mean, we just haven't played well in goal scoring and stuff like that. But what I would tell you is we haven't been played off the park once.
Yeah.
So the team's good. We're trying to find a solution. We're trying to find some beliefs, okay? And, you know, I know this club well enough that, you know, if things don't happen, we'll look to make a signing in the summer and we'll get it together.
If I can give you one takeaway from today's episode, do not count any team out, whether it's New England, San Jose, Nashville, Dallas, or even you, Seattle. Because an MLS season is long, and history says that teams have comebacks from much worse much later in the year. So my question for you is this. Who do you think can still turn their season around and have an effect on the Supporter Shield or even, dare I say, make a run at MLS Cup? Whose results haven't been as bad as they looked on paper? Call me, 646-571-8496. You can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at Taylor Twellman and on TikTok at Taylor Twellman _. Offside with Taylor Twellman is a Major League Soccer podcast produced by Apple TV and Rain Delay Media. Our executive producers are Peter Moses and John Yales. Isabel Angel is our editor. Michael Janot is our engineer. Jonah Buchanan and Iggy Monda are our producers. Music was composed by Brian Decker, and I am your host, Taylor Twellman. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts. And after you went 8-2-4, did you by any chance go to Vegas and play black a couple times or something? Red? No.
I don't like, I'm not a big Vegas fan, but I should have.
You should have been an odds maker.
Well, yeah, or I should have bought lottery tickets.